Welcome to another episode of Tales from the DC Multiverse, the podcast. As always, I'm your host, Adam. And with me this time is not Travis, because he had a work scheduling change, so he couldn't join me this week. And Ryan, unfortunately, couldn't fill in for him either. But we had planned on having a special guest for this episode anyway. And thankfully, she has now been promoted to the role of co-host. And she's been here before. And for some reason, agreed to come back. So she must have enjoyed herself the first time around. please welcome back Katie Ghostrap, everybody.
Hey, everybody.
How's it going, Katie?
I think this makes twice that I've been your emergency co-host.
Yes, you've been elevated to the co-host. So, which means I may have to fire one of those two guys eventually. If this keeps up, no, I'm kidding. I won't fire them. I'll just add you to the team on a more permanent basis, if anything. But yeah, it's good to have you back. And it seems to me that we were just discussing before we started recording. So far, out of the two occurrences, it's been to discuss a DC Universe related program. So that's yep. Interesting how that's worked out. That'll change when the new seasons of the DCCW stuff kicks in and Batwoman starts up specifically. I'm super excited for that and everything else. But right now, we're in the hiatus period, the dreaded H word. So we got to cover some other stuff. And we've got a few episodes of season one of Doom Patrol to get through. So Katie's going to be helping me do that. And I know you mentioned that you had liked the show and wanted to do it. But one of the cool things is you actually also write reviews for the show for Revenge of the Fans, so that adds to your knowledge of the series. So it's
all added 15 bonus episodes.
So enjoy. Once you're done listening to Katie tell you about the show, you can read what she wrote and see if you, who knows, you might pick up on little details that we may miss during our discussion and whatnot. But definitely head over there. And then check out those reviews. Before we do that, I'm going to start, as I always do on this show, with comic book recommendations. Now, Katie, I understand that since the last time you were on, one of the recommendations I made to you, along with plenty of other people, I'm sure, was Batman: The Long Halloween. And yep. you've started reading that, correct?
I did. So there's like 13 parts or something. And
yeah,
I got through about 20 pages.
Oh, good, good. So the first, you almost got through, I think, would that quantify as the first issue? I think
there was 46 pages.
Of one issue?
Yeah.
Well, must have been one.
I don't know about pages. I'm using the DC Universe app to do this. And so there were 46 swipes.
Yeah, so it's different, yeah. Plus they have that, I'm assuming, because I'm in Canada and I don't get DC Universe. Because
shame on you, DC Universe.
Well, why would they want to, you know, make money? But anyway, foreign concept, making money and all that. But I'm assuming they have that expanded view where you can zoom in and all that kind of good stuff.
Yep.
Like they do, kind of like how Comixology works, I would guess. It's something similar. Of your 20 pages that you've conquered so far, what are your thoughts on the story and the artwork?
You know, the artwork's pretty cool. I don't know. It's actually been like 2 weeks since I've read those 20 pages.
Oh, okay. So. You don't remember where you are.
No, so I'll probably honestly start over.
Good recommendation. Try and get through the chat again. I don't know what the page count is on your end, but you're enjoying the art.
Yeah, the artwork's really fascinating. You know, this is my first comic book, like Star Wars, Marvel, everything. So it's really neat to actually experience the artwork with it and with the story.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Good. Well, I'm glad you're enjoying. Yeah, Tim Sale is the artist. And he has a unique art style, which is which actually I think very much suits that particular story. So I think once you get into it and once you get into the further chapters, and you'll enjoy the murder mystery and how it unfolds. And it's a very good read for the upcoming Batman movie, I would suspect, but we'll get into that in just a little bit. My recommendation is a current miniseries that is on issue 2. It's called Deceased, and it's spelled DC and then the rest of the word deceased. So it's got that rapper kind of spelling thing happening. But it's by a writer by the name of Tom Taylor, who wrote the Injustice Gods Among Us comics, which were based on the video game. Do you have any knowledge of the video game, Katie?
Absolutely not.
All right. Well, it was this Elseworlds story where the Joker orchestrates the death of the Joker, Scarecrow, and a couple of other people. Orchestrate the death of Lois Lane by making Superman think that Lois is Doomsday. So in that battle, he accidentally causes Lois to die, and unfortunately for Superman, Lois Lane, spoilers, Katie, because you haven't read it, so cover your ears if you don't want to hear this. But Lois Lane was pregnant at the time. So this sends Superman into a rather raging state, which of course is natural. And he rips, he interrogates the Joker, actually bursts in after Batman had caught the Joker and decides to do his own form of interrogation. But there wasn't much of an interrogation because the Joker kept egging him on, and Superman said, enough's enough. If Batman had killed you when he had the chance, this would have been prevented. And so he rips out the Joker's heart.
Oh, my God.
And then events spiral and all kinds of cool stuff happens, which I won't spoil the rest of the story because there's so much more if you eventually get around to checking it out, which I would recommend. But that's not my recommendation this week. But the writer who wrote that wrote this other book that I'm reading. And this book starts with a virus outbreak, but it's not a virus like an infection of like a disease of some sort. It's a technological virus that turns anybody who receives this messaging into what amounts to like a zombie kind of creature. And so a lot of the DC characters are affected, it's a really interesting take on I really don't want to spoil this because it's so fresh. The one I was spoiling is about almost a decade old, so I don't feel as bad for spoiling that. Yeah, it's a really interesting take on the zombie genre, but adding the DC universe to the mix, and some really cool, unexpected stuff happens in the first two issues. So I think there's 6 issues, and I can't wait to see what happens next based on the first two. I'd recommend, because I'm a habitual reader, so I got to do the monthly thing, but for someone who's more of just getting into it, I'd recommend till all 6 are done and then get the trade, or get it on Comixology or the DC Universe if that still is a thing by the time this thing is collected and trade, but we'll see. But it's cool, so I recommend there are our listeners who want to do the monthly thing, check it out. I think you'll enjoy it. Let's get into some news, shall we, Katie?
Yes.
All right. So, Swamp Thing, it premiered. What was it? 3 weeks ago now.
Yep.
And correct me if I'm wrong. On the week that episode 2 dropped, it was announced that Swamp Thing had been canceled and would not be continuing past the completion of the first 10 episode season.
Yep.
That's disappointing. Granted, I'm behind on Swamp Thing. I've only watched one episode. I liked what I saw from the first episode.
I'm at the same part. I only watched the pilot.
Yeah, I intend to finish it. Don't believe me, I do. It's just things have been crazy this last little bit. So my watching time, I have to really try and eke some time out to watch these things. But it was disappointing to hear, especially after having watched that first episode. There's conflicting reports as to why this is happening. One says that the combination of AT&T and Warner Brothers, that are now the Warner Media conglomerate, were not happy with what they were seeing from Swamp Thing, from when it was in production, which is part of the reason why the production was slashed from 13 episodes to 10. There's another school of thought that says that it has nothing to do with that, but that it was because the reason for the cancellation is because Warner Brothers and DC were under the impression that they were going to get a certain amount of tax credit from filming in, I think it's North Carolina.
That's a PR spin.
Yeah.
It got canceled because Warner Brothers and AT&T didn't like where the show's going.
Yeah, right. I just want to put both theories out there. Look, it's upsetting. Would I have liked it to continue based on one episode that I've seen? Yes. But it's funny because the reaction I'm seeing from a lot of people, it sounds like this, like if you just read the reactions, it's as if this is the first time this has ever happened to a show, and it's just not the case. So yes, it's disappointing, but the amount of like the nature of the reactions is kind of taking me aback, because it's like, I get it. It sucks. Believe me, I do. I want all these DC shows to go on forever. If I had my way, they'd never end. But that's just me being a DC fanboy, right? And but unfortunately, if the guys paying the bills, right, for these shows aren't happy, they have every right to cancel it. Unfortunately, you know, that's the nature of the beast.
Yeah.
Do I think it was poor timing? I think they could have waited till the end of the 10-episode run to formally announce it, just because some people might eschew this to being, well, why the hell am I going to invest my time in this now, knowing that it's not going to continue? So I think the announcement was poorly timed. But again, from a fan point of view, it sucks. From them being the guys that foot the bill for this stuff, if they're not pleased, I get it. Like, I get both sides. Just hearing, you know, some of the stuff that came out about how, you know, they had a 3-year plan for a solo Swamp Thing series, and everybody in the production, writers, directors, felt that it could have morphed into expanding to an eventual Justice League Dark, which would have been cool. But again, I mean, you know, unfortunately, that's the nature of the beast, or the Swamp Thing, if you will. But what's your take on the whole scenario, Katie?
So going back to the whole not liking where the show is going, it was said that Warner Brothers was trying to go towards more of a CW vibe with the Greg Berlanti shows, Arrowverse, Black Lightning, the like. And it makes sense ultimately in that respect, because we've all grown up, but comics were originally meant for kids, right? And so trying to circle back to more child-friendly programming, I guess, is what they're aiming for, is stuff that kids can be involved in. Because, I mean, Doom Patrol, was full of curse words and stuff, and I can guarantee you, as a kid, my parents would have never let me watch that.
Yeah, there would be no chance. Zero.
And so, especially, Swamp Thing is definitely not my sort of thing, because it's very horror focused, but it's full of jump scares and like the creepy vibes, and my parents would have never let me watch that. So to me, it makes sense, but ultimately, like, you've had what, 2 generations grow up now from comics, and there's a lot of adult focus that could have been brought to this, especially with how critically acclaimed the show has been. Yeah. So to me, it's about trying to find a balance. And I really do hope that HBO tries to pick up some of the adult focused DC content.
Sure. Like Watchmen.
Yeah,
Which
with Watchmen.
they're doing that already, right? So yeah.
Yeah, and then so Doom Patrol hasn't been really renewed for a second season yet.
Yeah.
And more and more likely it's looking that it probably won't. So I'm really hoping that HBO just kind of takes it and grabs those, because I think those would be a great emphasis, and it would bring me to purchase the WarnerMedia streaming service more than if those shows were just blatantly canceled.
Well, here's the thing for me. Like, I get what you're saying, that they want to go back to the more of a CW style, because that's proven that it works, right?
Right.
Whether you look at, those particular shows themselves, or the MCU, which has a lot in common with the Arrow, or the Arrowverse has a lot in common with the MCU, I should say. So that's proven to work. So I understand that. My thing is, if you know that's what you want, then why go into production on something like Swamp Thing
Right.
or Doom Patrol to begin with? So that's where I have an issue with it, because and I get it, it was a different regime in charge when, before the AT&T merger, when the DC universe was trotted out and these shows were put into production. I'll be honest with you, when I heard that it was that Doom that sorry Swamp Thing was coming, I was shocked, because I thought, well, okay, this forget about the content. I was just looking at it from a purely, well, from a visual effects point of view, how is this going to work on a streaming service? Like, it looks very, or it seems like a very intensive character, and so how would they so to me it was a total shock that we were getting it in the first place. But look, I've got no problem with the CW model. I'm looking forward to. First of all, I love Titans. I'm just going to come out right out and say that. Out of the two full shows and the one episode that I've watched of Swamp Thing, Titans is my favorite of the three. I'll say that just right out of the ankle. So if you're gonna, if you and I'm immensely looking forward to Stargirl. I really am. So. If that's the direction they're going to carry the show, so I'm fine with it. I'm good. But if you want to go, if people at Warner Brothers or Warner Media or whatever they're called now want to go in from now on, go and explore the darker corners of the DC pantheon of characters, then just from the get-go, just go straight to like either HBO or sci-fi, who does Krypton and
Yeah.
whatnot. You have other channels at your disposal. Just put it on the appropriate channel from the get-go and avoid all this PR mess. And it sounds like to me that from everything I've read from certain sites and scoopers of and the like, they're very happy with Titans, and they wanna develop more shows like that. So it sounds like, because with the Warner Media, streaming app coming up, there's a school of thought thinking that the DC Universe app is going to be folded into the Warner Media app, which makes sense. I mean, really,
Yeah.
when you think of it, does it make sense to have a Warner Brothers own streaming service and then to have DC, which is owned by Warner Brothers, have its own thing? I would much rather see a service where you have DC as a segment of that service, and then I would price it out. This is just me, in tiers, so that if somebody wants the DC app as part of their service, they can have that. And if DC is not their cup of tea, or if they don't like HBO or whatever the customer doesn't prefer, they can leave that off. That's how I would do it. Now I that.
Well, so I think the reason DC Universe never went live worldwide was because this is just a guess. No
Yeah.
one hate me for this, but like the comics publishing license, I don't potentially like other because other countries have those licensed out. So
Sure.
I think it was ultimately the comics part that prevented DC Universe from going globally.
Could be.
And So if they just pull those shows in to the Warner Media app, it makes complete sense to just leave it at that and just say it's original Warner Media content.
Yeah. Yeah. And like I said, if they give me an option with the Warner Media app and like it's actually released worldwide, you know, like it should be, I'd purchase the tier with the DC Universe segment without doubt, because that's my thing, right? And I'd buy the Warner Media thing too, because of you know, Harry Potter. They got Harry Potter, which I enjoy, and so I'd be down for all this thing. I just want the option, you know, to be able to buy it. But I think ultimately, I think, like I said, I think some of the DC shows will survive. Titans, from what I understand, is profitable for them, so I think they'll continue with that, provided season two, you know, performs. Mm-hmm. And I think if Stargirl gets out of the gate good, I think that's a, you know, that has the quote unquote, you know, CW skewing formula to it, so I think that'll survive. We'll see how Young Justice fares. I think they'd be incredibly, see, I'd be more, from a fan perspective, I'd personally be more pissed off if Young Justice goes away again as opposed to Doom Patrol and or Swamp Thing, personally. But I think it would make a ton of sense for them to keep Young Justice around. And in terms of the Harley Quinn series, well, that's skewing R-rated. I don't know how that's going to go. Me being a fan of Harley, do I want it? Do I want season one to be A, good? Yes. And B, would I like it to stick around for more? Of course. But I'd venture to guess that, I mean, everything on this service can't be PG-13, can it? I mean,
I would doubt it.
So there'd have to be some element for, you know, where a Harley Quinn animated series that skews more adults would fit. So, but then again, with the popularity of the character, maybe that's something they decide to keep, you know what I mean? Because think about it, in the grand scheme of the general audience, who might invest in the Warner Media app, they'll know who Harley Quinn is. They'll know who Robin from the Titans is. I'd venture to say a lot of them don't know who Swamp Thing is. And they certainly don't know 3/4 of the Doom Patrol. so those have a better chance of survival rate, in my opinion. But I don't think the shows are all going to disappear or the service is going to disappear. I think it's just going to get morphed into a segment on the Warner Media streaming service. So that's where we're at. We will keep you posted on when we hear what exactly is going on with all that. But until then, enjoy whatever is left of Swamp Thing. And wait and see what happens with Doom Patrol. And when Titans comes back, watch it. And when Stargirl comes out, watch that too. I'll be watching it.
So I would like to do, I was listening to the Fanboy Garage earlier, and Aaron had a really good point. Like, what if this is all just one big PR stunt where it's like in 3 months when they finally announce when Warner Media is going to come out, they're going to just say, oh yeah, we canceled all these shows from DC Universe, but now you can find them exclusively on Warner Media.
Oh, like, so you're saying bring them back too?
Yeah. So it's just like, it's a cancellation right now to generate buzz.
I mean, it could be.
Yeah. I was like, that's a really plausible theory to me. So
it's plausible. It's kind of a crap move on Warner Brothers' part to put the fans through this. You know, I get it. It's buzzworthy, but for the people that already have the service, just come out and be upfront and say, hey, we're folding. We're going to be a part of Warner Media, right? That's what I would do. Like, you just, these people have paid, right? Give them, you know. Some advantage.
Bad PR is still PR, and this has generated a lot more buzz.
That's true. You can't argue with that. It's a look. I'm not going to deny the plausibility of the theory. That's for sure. So, but we'll have to wait and see, and hopefully, we'll hear something before. I mean, the thing's supposed to launch in 2020, so you got to figure that come January or February. We'll know
something before then.
Yeah, we'll hear something. So, we'll keep our ears peeled for that. Let's see. All right, we're gonna move on to some comic news. Since you've slowly started your reading journey, I figured we'll throw some comic news in there. So, two popular superhero teams are going to be making their way back into DC Comics continuity, into the Rebirth era. First of which is the Justice Society of America, which, Katie, I'm sure you're familiar with from Smallville and Legends. Yep. They haven't been in Rebirth, with the exception of a couple of characters in DC Universe Rebirth number one, way back when Rebirth launched, and they're going to be making their debut in a story arc in Justice League. And I think the first issue where they make their entrance or re-entrance into the DC Universe is Justice League number 31, and it's going to be written by Scott Snyder, and it's part of an event that they're ramping up right now. I think it's called the Justice League Doom War, I think. That's the Legion of, obviously referring to the Legion of Doom in there as well, in terms of that title. But it's kind of interesting to see the JSA making their return in a Justice League book, because when way back when the Justice League first formed, they sprang out into their own book after an encounter with the JSA. So it was kind of the other way around, way back when, during the beginning days. But what are your thoughts, Kitty, on the team, the JSA as a team, and also do you think that they should be automatically a part of the DC Universe? What's your take on all that?
So I liked what I saw of the team in like Smallville and Legends. That's really my only background in them. Mm. I like Stargirl. Obviously, Dr. Fate comes from the JSA, right? So yeah. Like, I always thought Dr. Fate was like badass. And can I say that?
Yeah,
is that allowed?
Yeah.
I really enjoy Dr. Fate's character, so I'm excited to see them come back. And who knows, maybe it'll get me to take a glance at the new Rebirth.
Yeah, once you get through the Long Halloween, you can definitely make your way through to JSA. I have some. I won't let you start cold. I'll give you some JSA recommendations as well. When the time comes. you let me know when you're done Long Halloween.
We'll do.
Which not to be mean, I'm just joking, but based on your current trajectory, probably by opening weekend for the Batman, you'll be good.
Just through that, I'm gonna finish it by October.
All right, good. I hope you do. we'll have you back for the Batwoman season premiere. You could finally give us your full viewpoints on Long Halloween. The other big superhero team that's making their return to the DC Universe is the Legion of Superheroes. Now, Katie, you'll also be familiar with them because they made their debut on their live action debut on Smallville way back when, if you remember.
Was that like Black Canary?
No, that was Lightning Lad and Saturn.
Oh, with like also, Aqualad?
No, they're also on, she's also on Supergirl. Yeah, Saturn, what was her, Saturn Girl?
Oh, yeah. Brainiac
5.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Yeah, right, yeah. Remember, there was the episode of Smallville where they're like, they couldn't tell Clark certain things because, God forbid.
Oh, I do remember that episode, okay.
because God forbid Clark ever put on a suit in that freaking show, which I still love, by the way. Just certain things irk me, but that's a whole other conversation, which we won't get into here. They are being reintroduced by writer Brian Michael Bendis, who listeners of this show will know that I've raved about, because he's been doing some fantastic work on both the Superman and Action Comics titles. And it will the Legion of Superheroes will first debut in Superman issue 13, because there is currently a crossover between the Superman title and the Supergirl title, which is just about to start up. And so something happens involving the Super Family of characters, and the Legion has to step in and help with whatever the crisis is going to involve. And then
Supergirl goes to the future. I know what you're talking about.
I don't know if that's going to happen. You could be giving us a premonition there, but
we'll wait. Referencing Justice League Unlimited.
Yeah, but it also happened in a previous comic, so you know comics are cyclical, so it may happen again. It wouldn't surprise me. So the Legion will then spin off of. So they'll appear in Superman 13. Eventually, they'll spin off into a two-part miniseries, before eventually getting their own title written by Brian Michael Bendis and drawn by artist Ryan Sook. And so I'm looking forward to that as well. They're actually a really unique group of characters. And in my estimation, I think there are four superhero teams that should always be a part of DC Comics lore. I don't care what version of the continuity you're doing, but there should always be a JSA, there should always be a Justice League, there should always be a Teen Titans, and there should always be the Legion. So I think the absence of both of those groups has been evident on the comic side of thing, and I'm glad they're back. And I will be spending my money on both of those comics. To which my wallet is currently screaming. and if you think me hearing my wallet screaming is insane, feel free to call your local asylum and have me checked in. But that's it for the comic side of the news. Let's move on to a little bit of movie sort of, how can I? It was a scoop. So let's classify it as quote-unquote news, and then if it gets confirmed, we'll obviously all rejoice, but it's coming from good sourcing from Thomas Polito on Twitter, I think, and he's part of the what website is he part of? Hold on, I have it up here. He's part
Geeks
of
Worldwide. Geeks Worldwide.
Yeah, he's had very reliable information in the past, so I'm going to assume that this reliability streak of his is continuing with this information, but he is indicating the first batch of villains that will appear in Matt Reeves' The Batman. So we all knew that, or it's been widely speculated for the longest time, that Penguin and Catwoman would be certainties.
Yeah.
The Penguin is being described as a Gotham City mobster, as he should be. He's being described as a short, obese man with a long nose. Yeah, sounds like the Penguin from the comics. Who uses high-tech umbrellas as weaponry. Reeves is apparently searching for a male actor of any ethnicity between the ages of 20 and 40. My gut feeling says it's going to be Josh Gad, because he keeps talking about it on Twitter. And if he doesn't, it's going to be the worst casting campaign job since Tyrese for Green Lantern. But that's my guess for that. Catwoman is being described as a Gotham City cab burglar, funny enough. Who wears a tight one-piece outfit, surprisingly, not really, and uses a bullwhip for a weapon. And Reeves is looking for an actress of any ethnicity between the ages of 20 and 30. So we knew that those two were going to be in it. Then we're also hearing that, let's see here, Firefly, did you watch Gotham? Katie?
I watched the first season.
So you never saw Firefly on that? Are you aware of Firefly at all?
Yes. Little. No, I'm lying.
Okay. Well, now you're gonna get. Basically, Firefly is a professional arsonist, who, in the film, supposedly, attempts to burn all the places that he lacked the privilege to go to as an orphan child. So for this role, Reeves is searching for a male actor of any ethnicity from the ages of 20 to 30. Then we have who I was hoping for. The Riddler is going to be this one. He's described as the main villain, who is a criminal mastermind who takes delight in incorporating riddles and puzzles into his schemes, and then leaving the police and the authorities clues to solve, which they typically usually can't. And that's why they need Batman. But for this, he's searching for an actor of any ethnicity between the ages of 30 and 40.
So give me David Tennant.
Oh, that's your pick. I was going to ask you who your pick is for all of these eventually. But here's my pick for the Riddler. And I'm going based off of what's happened in previous Batman films. Okay. So mm-hmm. I think that we know that Robert Pattinson is Batman. That's yep. confirmed. By the way, how are you feeling about that? You good with that?
I think he'll do a great job.
Good. We've talked about this. I don't know if that episode's... By the time they're listening to this, our listeners will have heard that episode. But I'm good with it. I'm glad you're good with it. I know Travis is good with it. And
I haven't seen any of his other films other than Twilight. But what he did in Twilight, he did fantastic.
Yeah, well, neither have I, but I'm going to go watch those. That's on my list of things to do prior to June 25th of 2021 or whenever the Batman, whatever the exact is. But so he's confirmed. And by the way, I've seen Twilight, and like I said on the casting show, Robert Pattinson wasn't the problem in those movies. That honor is bestowed on the script, and also the Wolf guy and Kristen Stewart. But anyway, so Robert Pattinson is our Batman, but we know that he was contending with Nicholas Holt. So I wouldn't be surprised if Nicholas Holt ends up as the Riddler. Reason being is that a typical trend, and at least with the Batman franchise, and I'm sure with others, is that when a director tests somebody and they get to the final stages of a casting process, if they're not cast for one role, the director will try and if he really likes them, fit them in to another role. And just looking at Nicholas Holt, I can kind of see the Riddler there. So I would be shocked. That's my go-to pick, is that we're going to eventually hear that Nicholas Holt has been cast as a Riddler. Look, if David Tennant's the guy, then I'm extremely happy with that, because I loved him on Jessica Jones. The best thing about that show, in my opinion. And so I'd be happy with him as a Riddler.
I can just picture a kind of Barty Crouch twitch to the Riddler with, like, not necessarily the tongue flick, but the tongue flick.
Right, yeah, I get what you're saying. For the role of Firefly, I really don't have... I can't say that I have a particular person in mind, to be honest with you. If I'm Reeves, I'd just be like, pick whoever you... Pick somebody that you've worked a bit with before. And we'll go with it. For the Penguin, do you have let's pretend that Josh Gad fails miserably in his attempt to be the Penguin. If you were casting the Penguin, do you have any ideas?
I would probably say Andy Serkis.
I'm glad I let you go first, because that's my pick as well. If if it doesn't go to Josh Gad, then that's my pick as well. He'd be great. And then for Catwoman, who would you... Do you have any thoughts in mind for that?
Oh, I'm trying to find, because I actually tweeted about this the other day and I could not remember who I picked. So you go first for who you want to pick for Catwoman.
All right, there are two. There is a, I think she's of Spanish descent. She was in the movie Baby Driver. Is that what it was called? Crap, I should have had her name on hand. Eliza, she was supposedly in the running for one of the Birds of Prey roles. Hold on, let me. I'm going to be unprofessional and go to IMDb as we're doing this podcast. But okay, my second choice for Catwoman, and let me know what you think of this, is our current Crazy Jane.
Oh no! I want her to be Crazy Jane in like a real movie.
Who do you want her as?
I want her to like be Crazy Jane. She's just perfect as Crazy Jane. She's done such a great
job. I understand that, but you know, Doom Patrol's probably not getting a movie, right?
Yeah, I know. I can dream, okay?
I know you can. Okay, look, if we can't have her as Catwoman, and we can't have her as Crazy Jane in a movie, can we get her to play Jessica Cruz, Green Lantern, like she did in the animated movie?
Yes. I can see that. My other pick for Jessica Cruz would be like Rosa from Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I don't know if you know what that show is.
I've heard of it. I've watched it on and off. I haven't watched it religiously. But if I'm remembering who that character is, or the actress, I could kind of see it. Okay, so I've got my Catwoman candidate here. It's Aiza Gonzalez from Baby Driver. That would be one of my picks as well. And definitely not Kristen Stewart. For anybody that's... any morons that are writing articles, well, since Robert Pattinson is Batman, no, it's not going to be Kristen Stewart. And if it is, I'm going to phone Matt Reeves and say, okay, look, I trust you on everything else, but really, have you seen the rest of Twilight?
My pick for Catwoman would be Lauren Cohan.
Oh, Martha. Oh, I'm so glad you brought that up. You basically want Martha from BBS to be Catwoman.
No, Maggie from Walking Dead.
Right, but I'm going to go with the Martha thing because it pisses off the Snyderholics. But yeah.
Oh, Martha. Sure.
So you want Batman's mother to become Catwoman. That's going to lead to a whole...
Was Lauren Cohan in Batman versus Superman?
Yeah, she was Martha. She got, when she got shot at the beginning, remember? That was the basis for the whole partnership of Batman and Superman.
I didn't remember who the actress was.
Look, aside from the fact that she's already played Martha, it's a good pick. I'd be down with it. I watched her short-lived series, Whiskey Cavalier, so I'm on board with that.
I think she'd do a really good job.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, if that happens, I'm great. And think of all the fun I can have with that casting for months. Be fantastic. You know what, Reeves? Do it. Just please. Just so I can have fun with that. I look forward to that. It probably won't happen, but I'd be down. I'd sign off on that, actually. And she's, what, probably 30-something? So she's in the age range of Robert Pattinson. So yeah, I could see it. Yeah, all right, good. If I was casting, I'd be done with that. And we also have two other roles that have recently come to light that apparently we're gonna get Mad Hatter, who is in The Long Halloween, which you're currently reading, and they're looking for somebody in their 40s and 50s, to which I suggest, what's that actor's name? Paul Giamatti, I think it is. I'd pick him as the Mad Hatter. And also, we're supposed to get Harvey Dent, aka Two-Face, but we're not sure if by the point of this film he's become Two-Face yet. And they're looking for an actor in their 30s to 40s for that. So, do you have a Two-Face candidate that you...
So I saw someone say John Hamm, and I am completely down with that. Give me John
Yeah.
Hamm.
Just, you know what? I'd almost do it for Brett Miro, just to make him happy. Because I think he'd have like a, I think he'd have a barbecue and invite all the Revengers over, and he'd celebrate over that. So I'd co-sign with that for that. If that doesn't work, I'm gonna give a shout out for Mario. Maybe Armie Hammer would be given a shot at this one. I think he could do a job. A good job with that one. So yeah, it would either of those two would make me happy. But knowing the way Matt Reeves cast Batman, it'll be somebody that wasn't on our radar. So we'll just have to wait and see. But it sounds like with this grouping of villains, it sounds to me like at least Matt Reeves is going to be borrowing from the Long Halloween elements, at least, or story kind of structure. And I know a lot of people freak out when there's more than one villain in a movie, but I think, let me know what you
It's
think.
supposed to sh it's supposed to s he Matt Reeves is planning a trilogy,
Right.
supposedly.
Right.
So realistically, the first one could be, okay, we don't it you said Riddler was supposed to be the main bad guy. We could
Yes.
just Riddler in at the very end, like laughing, or just like a riddle at the very end of the movie, and it's like, okay, there was more to this than we thought, and then that expands. And then the rest are just cameos, or like there's like Penguin and Catwoman are the main villains, and then the rest cameo.
Yeah, that's what I think it is. It's like glorified cameos, you know what I mean? Which, and again, the amount of villains is not necessarily the issue. It's how it's presented, how the story is told. And Matt Reeves is a fantastic filmmaker. Just go watch the last two Planet of the Apes movies. Go watch Cloverfield, which was an ensemble movie, with so many, human characters in there. So many main characters as well. So I think he can make it work flawlessly. So I like that the Batworld, this version of of Batman's world is going to be populated with these people already. Because if we keep going one at a time, there are going to be so many that it's going to take 30 to 40 years to get to, and who knows how many reboots before we get to some of these. So you know what I mean? I like the idea that we're getting an already populated Gotham City with various villains and such. So this
Well,
is all
and
exciting.
sorry.
No, go ahead.
Going back to what you said about how Matt Reeves will probably cast someone that's not on our radar, I really thought Mario brought up a good point. In one of the Revengers, there was either this last episode or the one before, but he said, because even though Matt Reeves has creative control, the studio giving him Robert Pattinson might lead them to put their foot down and try and put more of an ensemble cast or surrounding him. So,
Of familiar faces, yeah.
yeah.
I think there'll be a mix, honestly. I think it'll be a mix of people that we're not thinking of, but there'll be some that are more established names, so to speak, or more not necessarily established but traditional for these roles. So, but we'll wait and see. And like I said, at this point, because I'm happy with the Batman casting, I will continue to trust Matt Reeves implicitly. And take the rare approach of waiting till I actually see what's presented to me and not just overreact over a name. But that's how I'm going to broach it, and I'm sure the internet will react how the internet's going to react, like I forewarned you way back when on your very first appearance here.
I gave you
That,
credit for that.
right, I saw you did. Thank you for that. I that's a scenario where I hope that I wish I was wrong. But sadly, the internet never fails to live up to expectation. But that's all we have for right now for the Batman and for news in general. So let's get on to the meat and potatoes of the episode today, which is the remaining episodes of Doom Patrol. And as I look at the list here, we're going from episode 11. All the way through to episode 15. So, Katie, let's start off with episode 11 titled Francis Patrol. What are some of your thoughts on this one?
Oh, I'm going back to my review, which you can find on revengeofthefans.com.
Yes, as I said, definitely check this out.
Shameless plug. Yeah. Oh, I really enjoyed the scenes between Rita and Robot Man in these because it just felt more of like a bonding moment, and they were very natural. And so, especially with Rita, made such a huge transition between the first half of the season and the last half, and she really shows up as being the voice of reason. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't her in the beginning of the season, so it really was a huge turning point for her.
Yeah.
And then I did just want to point out one beautiful quote from this episode now that I'm rereading. They said, "Here's to the good things that make no sense." Like, that just spoke to me about the show so much, because it was just like, the show makes absolutely no sense, but I really love the show. It's the top show off the DC universe for me. And so it's just a good thing, and it's just something you can apply to life as well. So I thought that was a really good quote.
Yeah, that's a great quote. I actually like I like those scenes, and I really liked how Cliff, Robot Man, was really getting up the nerve to go have his moment with his daughter, but then he realizes how, you know, important that her adoptive father had been to her, right? Yep. And he realizes that, all right, the best thing for my daughter is to preserve, you know, that memory and those times with him, and the whole thing about the watch being this symbolic thing. I think that was a really touching segment, but also touching was the reunion between
Larry. I think this was Larry and his partner's name.
Let me look at it here. I've got it up here. No, where the hell is his name? It was here. I've just read it literally 2 seconds ago. John, there we go.
Yes.
And I love how they balance it between he was having those, you know, those scenes where he was projected into their like old memories, and then he goes and sees him in the old age home. That sequence, and to be fair, we had built up already with these two characters via the flashbacks beforehand, so we had a bit of, you know, some bearing with this relationship. And then when they finally meet in present day, and they have that reconnection, that was really some emotionally charged stuff. And, you know, the fact that they share those moments, and sort of John tells him, you know, you should move on and whatnot. And then as they say their goodbyes, they finally had the reunion, and they have to say the ultimate goodbye because John seemingly passes away. That was an emotional moment. Like, I was even getting teary.
Yeah, I was. I did cry at that moment.
And I'm like, damn you! I don't need to be crying over this, you know. But yeah, it was a really, like I said, this is one of the more, how can I describe this, more quote unquote normal episodes.
Yeah.
And I could just really get into the characters and the emotion, because these are tangible scenarios that you could actually relate to.
Yes.
And the cool factor of the episodes for me was Vic starting to worry about like grid malfunctioning and sort of the cybernetic part of him, like taking more control of his body.
Yep.
And his being. So he's now questioning, what the hell am I? You know what I mean? So that was a really intriguing aspect to it as well. But overall, I really, really liked this episode. One of my favorites. What about you?
In terms of, I did. I'm always a positive person, so I gave this one an A+. But right. I gave a lot of the episodes like A's. So
So if I had to, you know what? Since you brought up the letter grade, we'll do letter grade this week. You know, I really enjoyed this episode. I'll give it an A+ as well. It was one of the better ones for me. All right, so Next up, we had Cyborg Patrol. What are some of your initial thoughts on this one?
So I did enjoy the fact that the Doom Patrol crew is kind of just finally working together as a group. Cyborg's really relegated to a breaking point, honestly, in this episode. And I'm going to butcher his first name, Jovian Wade, he really excelled as Cyborg, especially in this episode, and portrayed the struggle that he's experiencing with Grid really well. And the rest of the team kill it working to rescue Cyborg. Like, this episode was like the weirdest with like the flying butts. Well, not
yeah.
I would say, yeah, we'll get to that.
It might be the second weirdest.
Yeah. But Alan Tudyk as well in this. Oh, man, yeah, Alan Tudyk is great.
He's phenomenal. He's just so good. And I like how he has the whole Deadpool thing going on with the, you know, the fourth wall breaking and talking to the audience. And he's like basically telling you this shit, this show is terrible. And like he's just like going off the rails, and it's great. It's refreshing. Actually, he was one of the best things about that that other DC show that he was in, where he played Bruce Wayne's cousin. What the hell is that show called? It was really dumb. With Vanessa Hudgens. Why am I blanking? It got canceled after 1 year.
Powerless.
Yeah, that's there you go. Thank you.
I'm going to grab the dogs. They're outside right now. Hang on.
All
right.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's okay. The dogs want to participate in the Doom Patrol discussion as well. Evidently, they're big fans of the show, and they'll be hoping. They'll be hoping the show gets renewed, folks. So maybe Warner Brothers will have compassion.
You want a treat? Come here.
Maybe Warner Brothers will have compassion for our four-legged friends.
And you want a treat? Come on.
Renew Doom Patrol. But we'll wait. We'll wait.
Okay, I'm back.
All right, Katie's back, and I was just telling the listeners that it seems like the dogs are want to get in and listen to this podcast too, because they're obviously big fans of Doom Patrol. So maybe Warner Brothers will be kind to our four-legged friends and renew Doom Patrol for them. I don't know. We'll see. I really do like Alan Tudyk in this show. He's definitely a highlight of not only this episode, but the show. And I loved the sort of quote unquote the prison break of the whole episode. Really watching Cyborg further start to lose it and question himself to the point where he doesn't know if the things that he's seeing and the memories he's having are factual or not. And so the scenes where he attacks his father, again, emotionally hard hitting, because it's like,
yeah,
I don't know about you, but I was yelling at the screen to like, I'm like, stop, you're killing him.
I was. It was insane.
So we had all that stuff. And then the thing that, and here's the good and the bad of Doom Patrol. There's so much good there. But the flying butts, and I can't believe I said that on there, really take me out of the episode. Like, it just takes me out of it. I don't know. Like, there are certain things I can suspend disbelief for, but flying rear ends, I think, is not one of them. So that kind of put a little bit of a damper on the episode for me. But what would you rate this?
So I gave it an A+ again.
Okay.
It was Cyborg that really did it for me.
Yeah. Cyborg was the savior of the rest of this episode. And Jovian Wade, you're right, is just putting on a clinic in terms of playing this character and getting to his emotional hardships and stuff, dealing with his state. And so for that, I got to give it some props. I'll take off some points for the butts. I'll give it a B plus of this one here. For sure. So next up, we have Flex Patrol. So what do you got with this one? What are some of your takeaways, your thoughts?
So I laughed a lot at this episode. Yeah. Flex is obviously a very unique character. And I really, Rita definitely took over the leadership role as Vic is in the hospital with his father as they're trying to recover from the last episode.
Right.
And the best pair in the series, really, I would think, would be Jane and Robot Man, Brendan Fraser and Diane Guerra. They're just
100%
great. I didn't like this episode as much. The Bureau of Normalcy definitely kind of took over the villain role, I would say.
Yeah.
Like Mr. Nobody kind of took a backseat role almost in a sense. And that definitely showed in this episode, because he does make an appearance, obviously, at the hospital. But his appearance was overshadowed almost by the Bureau of Normalcy. And so, yeah.
Yeah, I really like, there's a lot to like about this episode. Flex Mentallo as a character reminds me of something out of the like 30s or 40s, where it's essentially the circus strong man who, you know, it's all about, like, there's not much, you know, depth or complexity to his personality. So it very much is of that era. But in saying that, I did like the scenes where you get some context and you see him back at, you know, when he was captured.
Yeah.
At the Bureau of Normalcy, and you see his relationship with Cliff and how they were at one point trying to work together to escape. And then when you see how the only way they could get Flex to cooperate back then was by threatening his wife. And then when you jump to the present day, I really like the stuff with, again, more heartbreaking stuff. I mean, there's a lot of these three episodes we're talking about, a lot of heartbreak here. But when the team thinks they're doing something good by reuniting, you know, Flex with his wife.
Yep.
But then, as soon as he remembers who he is, you know, and they embrace and they hug and they tell each other how much they love each other, they start. This Avengers, you know, Endgame thing starts happening, where she starts dissolving, and I'm like, wait a minute, wrong universe. Where's Thanos? I didn't hear no snap, and so she dissolves into nothingness. And what was the, I can't remember exactly the reasoning. What was the hook, the story hook for that?
So basically, like, if they saw each other again, then she died.
Okay.
And so that's what happened.
It was as simple as that. Yeah. And then, but I really liked also the stuff with Rita and, you know, confronting her, like the fact her guilt over the part she played in the death of that actress back way back when.
Yep.
It's and sort of, it really speaks to her character growth throughout the season to date. She's really changed. And she, I think, out of Out of mostly everybody, I think she's had the most traditional hero's journey type storyline.
Yeah.
If you will. Because, I mean, Cliff kind of, Obama, yeah, he was a jerk when he was human, but once he became Robot Man, he was kind of like more willing to do the hero thing. Crazy Jane, God lover, is just nuts. But she goes along with the group more often than not. But I think Rita had the most challenging journey to sort of accepting the hero role, if you will. So yeah. It was good to see her throughout the course of the season transform into that. But also, it was good to look back and see what led her to feel at certain points so down on herself and so upset.
Yeah.
So that was the standout of the episode for me. And again, Flex is a fun character that is a throwback to more of the 40s and stuff like that. 30s and 40s kind of stuff. And I guess even 60s, because there was a lot of cheesy stuff going on in 60s in terms of comics. So it's got a little bit of all three of those eras. So, but it's a fun character, and the guy that plays him is you could tell he's having a ball with it, right? So,
yeah, Chandler Long, I think this is awesome. He's great. I liked him.
Yeah. So, what would you give this episode?
Well, I actually gave it an A-, specifically because of the Bureau of Normalcy, like the villain role. I took issue with that.
Yeah, because you just wanted more of the.
I wanted more of Mr. Nobody.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to actually give it an A, so I'm going to go a little higher than you this time around. Because I like the Bureau of Normalcy as a villain. Not to say that I don't want more of Mr. Nobody, but I do like, I did like where that was developing, where that was going. So that was a plus for me. So I'll give it an A. All right, so next up is Penultimate Patrol. I mean, they're really going all out with these, titles on the nose. I'm surprised the last one wasn't titled Finale, but, Smallville had that distinction. but your thoughts on Penultimate Patrol?
Honestly, this episode is probably one of my favorites of the season. Besides Danny Patrol, I really enjoyed Danny Patrol, anyways. I'll put the first awkward like 3 minutes where Flex flexes the wrong muscle. That was a little weird.
Yeah, that was
weird for me.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, Warner Media must really love that.
Yeah. You can find. Folks, if you don't know what we're talking about, you can find the video on YouTube. I don't really want to talk about that. Anyway. But I really just enjoyed when Mr. Nobody took them into the flashback to where each person was placed into the situation where they originally got their powers, or with Jane where she got more of them, or anything. And I really just enjoyed how each member of the team really just accepted themselves and said, no, F you, I'm going to do what I want to do. And this is me, and this is who I'm proud to be. And that's just a huge highlight for me in it.
Yeah, I think that like he forced, Miles Calder to admit his.
Yep. His involvement. And I totally saw that coming. I don't know about anyone else, but I was just like,
what, that he had a hand in all of them becoming what they were? And see, I didn't see that coming.
Yeah.
I literally fell for that.
I was like, wow. There's no way he would be gone this much if Mr. Nobody wasn't like trying to get him to like admit to it. I don't know. It totally made sense.
It totally threw me for a surprise, but it was a good one. And like the initial team reaction, I think was great. Like the whole, and and completely justified that they were all pissed off, and especially, I mean, all of them have a right, every single one of them has a right to be angry. But I think because of what we saw way back in the pilot with Cliff, and how hard he took the news that, you know,
yeah,
his wife had died, and that he couldn't be with his daughter, and there's no contact with his daughter, and he couldn't really feel emotion or any feeling whatsoever because of the robotics and all that. I think he's had the, for my money anyway, one of the, like he, in terms of getting screwed, like he's near the top of the top of the yeah. list, right? Mind you, Crazy Jane didn't have a picnic either, but yeah, so all of them kind of turning on him is not, I mean, it's kind of obvious that it was going to happen, but it works because the reaction is completely justified.
Yes.
And what better villainous motivation than to like look what he accomplished. He in you know, the span of an episode,
yeah,
destroyed that team dynamic that had been building so nicely, and I thought the progression was really solid from episode one all the way to episode, through the way to episode 14 of them as a team, and even furthermore becoming more of a family as well than just a team.
Yeah, and in one fell swoop he basically destroys that.
Like, that's a mark of in my opinion, in any kind of media, you know, show or medium, that's the mark of a good villain. So this was a really strong moment for Mr. Nobody, for sure. But yeah, I really, that renovation, because it surprised me so much, I have nothing but positive. And think about it, the majority of this episode literally takes place in a white space. So not much is going on. But you don't care that there's little to no action because of the story you're being told and the events that are unfolding. So yep. I think this one's a highlight for me. What would you, unless there's something else you really want to key in on, what would you rate this this one here?
This one I rated A+ because of the villain moment for Mr. Nobody. I thought that was a great mark, but as well as just the acceptance part where each of the members goes back to that and chooses to go get their powers.
Yes, yeah. Even though they have a chance
with those A+.
Yeah, I agree, because each one of them could have taken the cop out and said, no, I just want to stay in my old life. And again, while I do say that Cliff had the, you know, the most strenuous hero Rita. While Rita had the most strenuous of heroes' journey, they all sort of have really embraced that role and that title, even though they're as dysfunctional as dysfunction can be. So I'm going to give it an A+ this episode here. And then there's the finale, Ezekiel Patrol. What are your thoughts on this?
So honestly, I thought this one missed the mark for me personally. Like, I enjoyed the last part, but ultimately, like, it felt like a CW season finale ending. Like, it didn't match up to the rest of the season, in my opinion. Ultimately, it was Rita's shining moment, though, convincing Mr. Nobody to become the narrator again and be able to turn around their moment. Or the cockroach and everything.
It was just like, I get the whole weirdness of it all, and it's just, you know, true to form for this show. But along with flying rear ends attacking our team of heroes.
The cockroach.
I think the giant cockroach thing. is the second thing that I'm like, no, I can't. I just can't roll with this. My suspension of disbelief can't handle this. Like
well, and to me, like the whole making out thing with the cockroach and the mouse was them trying to like make up for the lack of weirdness in the episode, or like try and match up via that, but it really didn't. It was just kind of weird.
No, it didn't work. So like, if there are three moments that sort of have me questioning of how much if Doom Patrol comes back, things that I absolutely never want to see again are the flying rear ends, the hair eating dude, because that was just disgusting.
Oh yeah.
Talk about, that should have been titled Gag Patrol because that was nasty. And the cockroach thing. I can't. And I honest to God, I wanted more of Mr. Nobody in more of a villainous role than that. That's what I wanted from the finale, but we didn't get that. And so, I mean, it was a great moment for Rita. Yes. But the rest of it just felt like all the good stuff you build up to, it goes ultimately nowhere with this episode. Like, I'm intrigued by Miles' daughter and all that. So, like, if it comes back, I'll come back at least to start to find out, A, how the hell do they get out of this predicament? And B, what happens with the daughter? Because I'm intrigued about that. But it becomes not, okay, where are they going to go with the weirdness? Are they going to rein it in like they had for most of the season? Or are they going to continue along that path where it's more of the cockroach, the hair-eating man, and the butts? Because if it's a steady diet of those three things, if this comes back, I don't know how long I'll last.
See, I did mention in my review, I was like, I did list a couple things of what I wanted to see for a second season. I said, keep up the weird factor and keep the team together. To me, the strongest episodes that Doom Patrol's had is when weirdness is high and the team is in the same mission, like they aren't split up.
Right. Okay.
And then I want more Mr. Nobody. I was like, let him narrate again, or get the Brotherhood of Evil going with Mr. Nobody in the background. I
definitely want to see that, yeah.
I said, I'm interested in the incorporation of Dorothy Spinner as the immortal child. Possibility of bringing more superheroes into the mix. I did say keep the group small for a while. I think it's an interesting predicament, and it's a hysterical way to try and get the group to resolve their issues, yes, particularly with the chief. And then I said, I need more Crazy Jane. In the last half of the season, she basically like dropped off the radar. And she was an extreme highlight of the first half. So I need more of her.
She was hands down. Like there to me, there was a top three tier list of characters. And it was Crazy Jane number one, Cliff, Robot Man number two, and Cyborg number three. Those were my top three. So I definitely want more of those three. And look, keep up the weirdness. The weirdness is fine. Just
keep it not too weird.
Where's the weirdness? Like, if I gotta take as many drugs as Grant Morrison did to probably have to write some of that stuff when he wrote in the comic. I don't know if I'm down for that. Just that's not my thing. So, like, you've got me hooked with, what really had me hooked was, yes, the weirdness was, most of it was cool, but what really had me hooked were the characters. And through all this insanity was the fact that the emotions would peek through and get to you as a viewer. That's what kept me tuning in. So
the character development and the emotions in this were really, really good.
Yeah. So that's what I want more of. But and so if we get more, that's what I want to see. But if you had to rate this episode, what would you What would you rate it?
So I gave it a B plus.
Mm.
And then I gave season one an A minus.
Okay. All right, so I'll do the same thing. I'll do C for this episode. It was an immense letdown. And overall, a B plus for the season.
Yeah.
Which is a good rating for me. It's not
like I wanted to give it a lower rating, but this episode specifically. But ultimately, like, for the execution of what we got, I think ultimately my expectations were just too high. So I did give it a rating for what we had and not what I was, like, hoping for.
Fair enough. I wasn't giving on what I was hoping for. I just, for the most part, I didn't like the episode. So...
I wasn't saying you were. I was just saying, like, that was...
I hear you. Totally hear you. But yeah, so B plus, like it's not a cinema score thing for me where B plus is a negative rating or B is a negative thing. Because for me, when I was in school, certain subjects, if I got a B, that's going on the fridge. It's as good as an A. So
yep.
B plus is a good rating in my book. So yeah, if it comes back, I will tune in. At least I'll give it another handful of episodes and see where they're at. But until then, that is our wrap up of Doom Patrol for this year. Thank you for finishing the season off with me, Katie.
Thanks for having me.
And if you like hearing Katie on this show, well, that's a good thing because we are having her. We are planning to have her more often on not only this show, but we've arranged an upcoming appearance, at least recording wise, on the show.
I promise I won't rant about Tobey Maguire on the next
appearance. And if that doesn't give you a hint, she will be joining us for our walkthrough through the Spider-Man universe on film. That's a mouthful for me just saying, as you know, we're reviewing the Spider-Man films. And next in the queue is The Amazing Spider-Man, which was the 2012 reboot of the franchise with Andrew Garfield and one of my multiverse wives, Emma Stone. That's a discussion for next time. But she will be on superheroes and sci-fi as well, so she'll be crossing over to the other show, to the Marvel side of the aisle, and then she'll be back here for some CW talk for sure. And we're gonna try and do that before the summer closes out. We're gonna do that Batman Bad Blood film with Batman.
Yeah, the one you had me watch originally.
yeah. So we're gonna do that before the summer closes out as well. So lots of Katie coming up on all the podcasts. And I mean, hey, if she ever decides to start watching wrestling, she can come on that one too.
Probably not.
I'm pushing it with that one. But but yeah, so more Katie here at on this podcast and superheroes and sci-fi as well. So look forward to that. But in the meantime, before your next appearance, Katie, if our listeners want to chat with you about anything, superhero, where can they do that?
You can find me on the Twitter sphere or Instagram at KGilstrap13. That's KGilstrap with 13 on the end.
Awesome. And if you want to track me down, you can at Superhero Sci-Fi on Twitter. And we also have the Tales from the Multiverse, the podcast Facebook page, where you can request permission to come in there. And either Ryan, Travis, or myself will add you to the group, and you can bring up everything from DC to the Marvel to Star Trek to Star Wars to wrestling, whatever, and we'll talk about it. Just try not to bring up Batman and Robin too often, because then I may block you and send you to the Phantom Zone. But other than that, we're open to talking about pretty much anything. But we hope you enjoyed this this episode. And whether you're listening to this on a weekday or weekend, we hope you have a good one. Until next time, so long, everybody.
Bye.